we didn't lose the audio.
Accidents happen.
No, bullshit. James fucked up.
Hello, patrons. Last time we recorded this pod, I started on a Tuesday trying to pretend like it was Wednesday, but now it's actually Thursday. So whatever.
Are you going to pretend it's Wednesday?
Yeah, let's pretend it's Wednesday because we lost some audio from the original Tottenham, and it was probably the best podcast we've ever recorded in the history of Planet FPL.
Yeah, we didn't. Lose.
Maybe not.
We didn't lose the audio.
Accidents happen.
No, bullshit. James fucked up. Is what happened.
So we're going to try and replicate the conversation from a couple of days ago around Tottenham, which is difficult to do. So we probably won't. But
it's going to be shit.
it's hard when you've had the conversation to repeat it again. But the basic premise. Of the conversations was obviously there was only one game to talk about because we played each other, and prior to us recording you had mentioned that the away fans the support was pretty poor on Sunday, and I'm really
and
not
as soon
surprised.
As I mentioned it you acknowledged that
away. Because I mean I wasn't there myself watching on TV. Your lot were very loud, and I think we talked about the Zuma situation, but having a focal point of booing Zuma seemed very brought everyone together. But I watched West Ham Fan TV, a couple of videos there, and the guy on there, Nicky Hawkins, he was saying Hawkins even, but the way you pronounce Hawkins, he was saying that he
is that
had
like
never
a real
felt,
have you got to pronounce it like a cockney?
Nicky
Hawkins.
I thought his surname was Hilkins for years.
Okay.
But it's Hawkins.
I didn't know you had a West Ham fan TV.
Hawkins, Nicky Hilkins. So basically, it's Hawkins. And I thought
anyway, Nicky
Hawkins.
Will be on next week's Tottenham. Not.
He said that he had never seen an away end, so not bothered about a game or result. So I'm not surprised that it's so flat 2 days after, 3 days after the Sevilla game. Well, you mentioning that it's so flat, but it's disappointing, really. It's really disappointing because the narrative pre-game was that West Ham would be tired after 120 minutes. The guys on Sky were talking about it. It was all we heard on the radio. We then set up with kind of five at the back or three at the back, whichever you want to call it. But that's definitely a more defensive setup than offensive setup. Which again was like, okay, we've come here to keep it tight. We haven't come here to attack you. We've come here to not concede. And so you're already on a hiding to nothing. You've put yourself in a negative mindset before the game has even started. If that was the case and we were looking to just see the result out or try and keep it really tight, fresh legs, like play some of the other fringe players. Because if we're going to lose anyway, we're going to lose. Then...
Hindsight.
Play some other players.
It's hindsight as well, though, isn't it?
Oh, it is. But, I mean, I felt when I saw the lineup that we shouldn't have gone with five at the back.
Why?
Sends a wrong message.
Does it? My team plays that every week.
Yeah, but that's how you play every week. For us, we've changed from four at the back to five at the back. And what it's done is taken one attacking player off. Lanzini... is an attacking player, but he drops in to help midfield. So he's not an out-and-out attacking player. And Ben Rama's good on the fringes, but he needs other players around him.
Agreed.
Whereas Bowen, you get it to Bowen, he might not need other players around him. Ben Rama always will. And so Lanzini, Ben Rama, and Antonio are not going to score enough goals in a game to win it. We need one other body up there who's way more direct. And we didn't have it. And then Rice and Suchek... you're reliant on one of them to link up and get forward, and they didn't really do it. And so, yeah, it left us light at the top and sent a message that we're going to try and defend. And I'd said it on Twitter, and I'll say it again, like the first 15 minutes, I felt like Tottenham had come out, and clearly in the dressing room, you're going to say, look, these guys are going to be tired. Get out and just go for it. And you were able to press us, and with three at the back... it's one each, one for Son, one for Kane, one for Kulu, and you can put pressure on us. And the Zuma being right-sided, not central, I found a bit confusing. I get it, but it's a bit confusing. And then What I would give West Ham credit for is we didn't then try and just hoof it. We did try and pass out, but a lot of the time you play your triangles, but they then go back to the keeper and across. Like, we were passing out, but we weren't getting out. So we were passing it around and staying in our own half, and then eventually you lose the ball and then it comes back.
By the way, a bit of credit to my team now.
What?
For why that was happening.
For pressing?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you came out with the intensity of it. Now, had you not scored in the first 20 minutes and we were to get the sting out of it, then fine. But you obviously went 2-0 up. And at that point, it is literally a bit frustrating. We scored from a set piece, and that added a bit of edge to the game. But as the longer the game went on, the worse it got. Even though you have a team that can sit in deep and hit people on the break. Like, you're perfectly set up for that. Ball into Kane, spins, he's got runners either side, off you go. And the higher line a team plays, the better. I've seen it again and again, even against us. So even though we had spells of possession and build-up play in the second half, there wasn't any real penetration. And at the same token, you always feel like you get hurt on the other side. And the longer it went on, the more leggy we looked, even though I don't like going towards that as an excuse. And it was just a nothing burger, really. There's no emotion in it. You know, you feel sometimes you're like, oh,
well,
fine,
yeah.
But every Spurs fan, like my Spurs fans, if they're giving me grief on Twitter, it's just like, you know what? You were better than us on the day and nothing else to add to it. Like, I'm not
there wasn't anything in the game, to be honest, that you could properly have a pop off or particularly complain about. I think 3-1 was about right in the end. Mm. It was a fair reflection of the score. Yes, you had a couple of moments through Antonio, and we'll come back and talk on to him a little bit. At 1-0 and at 2-1, but we also had other moments at other points in the game as well. So
Kane went through, Sonny went through. They had enough chances to score more, yeah, for sure.
I think 3-1 was about right in the end. I want to come back onto, before we talk about some of West Ham's tactical decisions, the atmosphere a little bit more in terms of... and I think West Ham fans can take a positive out of this. It's not just a criticism, oh, your fans are shit. How many times have we said down the years, oh, you lost your cup final and taking the piss out of you and that. And the reality was that it was the second most important game of West Ham's week.
Yeah.
Never mind like a season or something. Mm. And I think that had a real degrading effect on the atmosphere in terms of the away support, in terms of the high of Thursday.
Yeah.
Then carrying that into Sunday, which is normally like it's so hyper and stuff going into the game. We discussed on Tuesday, we discussed it. I went into the ground really early, so if there was any trouble or anything, I genuinely have no idea. But you could feel that naughty atmosphere in the air before the League Cup quarterfinal. I spoke about coming out of Stratford earlier in the season. Your lot were bouncing, Tottenham battered everywhere they go. And obviously it reversed the other way round on Sunday, gone. But to be honest, there was a murmur of bubbles about 3-4 minutes after we scored the first goal. And until that point, I hadn't even realised your lot were there.
Mm.
It was nothing. And I expect that on kickoff, you know.
Yeah.
A proper, you know, West Ham, we're here, rendition of bubbles.
Oh.
Of course, it's a podcast. See, our fans phone's going.
We travel everywhere. We'll always sell out any allocation we get. And if I watch away games... I will hear our lot singing in the background always, but it just didn't feel like that. And we were drowned out a bit, and obviously Zuma got booed every time he got the ball, and that kind of helped. And he got the ball a lot, right, because we were passing around the back.
Pantomime villains will help atmospheres, and Kurt Zuma was it on Sunday. Added by the fact, obviously, he's obviously scored the own goal, so then there's even more pressure. Oh, maybe it's putting him off and stuff as well. It was incessant, the booing of him. He didn't have a great game. But from the atmosphere perspective, I just think it's interesting. I think it says a lot about West Ham's growth, actually, in a way. But also, it's difficult if you're... And I don't feel like West Ham fans are particularly angry with Sunday. I feel like they understand what happened. I feel like they know
on
the day they were beaten by the better team. Possibly a lot of you didn't like the tactical setup, and obviously there was mitigating circumstances with the extra time against Seville less than 3 days earlier. But psychologically, it says a lot for the growth, I think, of West Ham, that this isn't just you lost your cup final. I haven't heard anybody to any Tottenham fans how you lost your cup final, because a lot of us looking at it, I wouldn't say enviously, but looking and going, look, you've got a great draw in Europa League.
We've still got a trophy to try and win this season.
You've got a great chance of doing something in that competition. And if
I
you
felt
do
that
it,
until Barca battered Real 4-0.
Yeah, but then, see, here's the thing, Suj, like, you won, trust me, if you beat Lyon, don't be, if you're a West Ham fan, you're listening to this and you're going, oh, I hope we get Frankfurt in the semi-final. To fuck with that. You want Barcelona, because Barcelona gives you the opportunity to have what I had in Amsterdam.
I get it. I also think, maybe it's naive, our style of football and British football is different to what Barcelona are used to,
yes,
week in, week out. So it presents a different challenge. I'm not saying we're as good, we're capable of, but it's a different challenge. And on our day, we can beat anyone. Like, we've seen it time and time again. On our day, apart from City, we've just never
let's be very clear. We've spent a lot of this last year, to be honest, 18 months longer, ripping the shit out of Barcelona because of the state of the financials. Team. Now, the financials look bad because they've signed this agreement with Spotify now for stadium shirt sponsorship. The fucking works, basically. I don't know if they're going to have an advert inserted into every 10 minutes of their game. I'm not sure at this stage. But they've obviously improved massively since Xavi's gone in there. As kind of proven by some of the recent results, including the thumping at the Bernabeu at the weekend. But if you end up playing them, it's not fucking Iniesta and Xavi and Messi and Neymar and Suarez, right?
It's Aubameyang.
Like, they're beatable.
They are beatable, but also it'll be tough. But yeah, look, we've got to get through Lyon first. And I think it's head down and get through Lyon first. And then we'll worry about it. But you're right. I mean, it just didn't have the hype that I thought it might. Spurs away.
Onto the tactics. When I saw, and I said this to you on Monday, when I saw you were the team you'd picked, I literally didn't think about it much more than quite simplistically looking at it and going, well, West Ham are going to match us up. And how that pans out, we'll see once the game kicks off. These teams have changed the back threes against us this season and done quite well. These teams have changed the back fours and done quite well against us this season, and vice versa. There were a few things that harmed you system-wise. So I know you're saying you didn't like Zuma right-sided centre-back. And I explained to you that Dawson is not the cleverest on the ball. You don't want him stepping out into midfield. Not that Zuma's a world beater on the ball, but he's a lot more comfortable on the ball, let's say. That's why I think he played wide of Dawson. The problem that did have is we spoke about it on Friday and said Zuma plays Kane really well. So Kane never went anywhere near him. Zuma ended up in one-on-one duels with Son quite a lot. And Son offensively, obviously, particularly on the second goal, has done really well against him. Johnson is no wing-back. He's a young full-back, isn't he? He's not a wing-back. So then it invariably really does sit into a back five. You never get into a position with him where he's going to be pushing Reguilón really high down the touchline or something. It's not happening. So Reguilón can go and push high against him. But that also said, we spoke about this a couple of years ago, and we spoke about this annoyingly on Tuesday. This imbalance you have with right and left when Masuaku plays, where at times you watch it and you're not sure if it's a back four or a back five. So then Crespo ends up really kind of left back. Masuaku becomes a left winger.
Masuaku is quite non-existent, to be honest with you. He didn't really have a good ball.
Can I be honest with you? The only time I remember him really touching the ball was when Doherty won it off him for the first goal.
He was anonymous, is the right word.
And he has been a nuisance player against us in the past, in fairness.
Against all sorts of clubs, he can be. But it's just so Gattuso. Sometimes I may be good, most times I may be shit.
Antonio, for me, had to be more intelligent in his work in the game. Again, we spoke about this Tuesday, annoyingly. Where did his two chances come from? Right-hand side of the box, Ben Davis's channel, basically.
The one he blazed over was on the right, and the other one
and
was
the chance right after the first goal as well. Yeah. He got nothing out of Romero all game long, but it felt like he was going up against Romero all game long. I'm looking at his stance, I'm thinking, why don't he go up against Ben Davis? He'd bully the fuck out of Ben Davis. If he'd have gone and went, right, I'm going to go and play in that channel, Romero ain't following him.
No.
I know Romero will go wandering, but you go, well, no, we stay in shape defensively off the ball and stuff. I don't know why Antonio didn't move away from him, what the thinking of that was.
Yeah.
Maybe there was a thought process, because Romero does like to dive in. You know what I say, he's 9 out of 10 or 4 out of 10, basically. Well, he was another 9 out of 10, and there's more 9s than 4s at the moment, I can assure you. he was another, not 9 out of 10, but he played Antonio extremely well on Sunday. He was in first, in strong against him. Honestly, did you not think that? Like, go and play against Davis.
It felt quite easy for it. Like, Romero got his foot through quite easily quite a lot of the time. It was a fair tussle. What Antonio did well in the last two games, both Villa and actually at Sevilla's, is turning people and running in behind. A couple of times he'd hold the ball up and then he'd go. And if defenders got caught, then he's through and he's running at you and what have you. But he didn't get any change out of Romero at the weekend.
No, and it's easy always when a game of football happens to be critical of the team that's lost is often easier than praising the team that played well, and my team did, mate.
Yeah, I tell you, it's because we didn't play as well as we can, right? It's hard to say.
It's nothing to do with the fact that Tottenham played well. Just,
well, no, of course, you can only play what's in front of you. That's the thing, right? You can only play what's... It's not Tottenham's fault if West Ham don't turn up and don't play well. But I'm like, okay, yes, you played what you had in front of you fine. I'm like, why? If we'd have played to the best of our ability, the game wouldn't have gone as it did. But that's nothing you can do about it. And it's hindsight. It's like a ifs and buts, might be maybes. We don't know. You might have been shit. We might have been good. And you might have nicked a result or what have you. But what I would give Spurs credit for more than anything was that first 15, 20 minutes.
We let you know.
All over us.
We played it like a derby.
And that was it. And it was like, okay, if we were under the impression that it would be a slow, nervy start where no one wants to lose and let's just feel each other out, it wasn't that. And I knew from the beginning, in the first 15 minutes, right, these guys have had that chat in the dressing room before the game, right, we've got to go after these in the first 15, 20 minutes. If you'd have not scored in that time, it would have been but you did. So that was that. And then it just, yeah, we didn't have the firepower to respond. But it really felt too easy. Like, when we play a high line against you, we always get hurt. It's happened in previous games before. And
but isn't that a little contradictory to say you end up in like a back five, but you're playing a high line? I disagree with that.
What?
About the high line.
The second half, we had acres of space in and around and behind for you to run.
Yeah, well,
into.
You're chasing the game at that point, aren't you?
It's true.
You've got to take some risks.
It's true. And what you do differently, I don't know. Because if you are letting us have the ball, we'll naturally keep pushing up the pitch, right? But it's just dangerous. That's the problem. And, Johnson and Zuma are not slow, right? For pace, Sonny didn't get away from him from pace, like, suddenly be clear. But there were opportunities where you'd be able to play through us. I think it was just, yeah. Don't get me wrong, that first 20 minutes, the intensity of the game set the tone, and that was it. And if Rice is a little bit off it, and he didn't have his best game by far, then it affects the rest of the team. He's the player that we look to. If we're in a not playing well, he's the one that will step up and then suddenly change the tempo for us. He didn't do it all game at all.
But I don't think he had the personnel around him to... Like, he can go and make a 30, 40-yard run and go and... Like, he drives past people, doesn't he? Mm. Like, you've spoken about, he's really quick over 3-4 yards.
Yeah.
Like, he just shifts a gear and he's gone. But you still need someone around it. It's not like the goal... What was the goal he scored in the Kidderminster? Like, you ain't going to walk through like that
where someone
follows the ball and
but
stuff
I,
like that.
I don't
that.
Remember him ever making a driving run or picking up the ball and, like, dictating play, spreading it left, right, maybe, trying to get the
maybe
team
he's
going.
Shattered.
It could well be. It could
Maybe he was told not to.
That's the other thing, right? I don't know. But
so, I mean, you talk about high line, like the second goal, Son's first goal. I don't even know how you defend that in terms of Bentancur plays a pass into Kane where the weight of it is so perfect that Rice thinks he can win it. And if he wins it, like you're in like 4-4 or something. He goes to step and win it. He's just a little bit short of yards. Kane's first touch, like in the movement, he takes two touches where he's back to goal and it's right under his spell and he's looking to play Sonny in. The pass is perfect. Okay, Cresswell's too deep. It's the old wing-back problem in terms of being too deep. And then Zuma's faced up with Son one-on-one and Son's done him. It was almost... And actually, Zuma's got a little deflection on the shot, right? So it's not like he was bought beat all ends up and completely killed off it. I think it was like an incredible incisive goal. And I don't know how you can... So that's the one where I think people say, oh, you're too high, you've let Son in behind. Okay, the third goal, two people go and challenge for a header and they fuck it up. It's different. But on the second goal, I'm not even sure how you defend that. I'm looking, I'm going, what a goal.
Yeah, it's a good goal.
Like two passes on the deck over sort of 20, 25 yard distance. We've played
maybe
the ball
a bit longer.
We've played the ball over 50 yards in two passes and the ball hasn't left the ground. This is quality football. And I think that's what people are referring to in terms of our high line because the threat of Sun and stuff. But I don't think that was the issue.
I think it was later in the game. The second half was when we were much higher. I don't think but that was a...
Then you're chasing it. If your team didn't take risks, you'd be annoyed, wouldn't you?
If you just
we're worried about the counter attack and you didn't do anything, you'd be more vexed than if you give it a go, right? So
yeah.
I think that's difficult. You don't want to be in a position really with Tottenham that you're losing. I think we're becoming quite a dangerous team to play against if we're winning because the front three are quality.
Yeah.
Decky's great in terms of his understanding with Harry and Son, and they're devastating when they get in position, and that can happen. It was mentioned what 3-5-2 says about Kane and Son as like clutch players, win a game on their own. But a lot of this came from I was so impressed with the way we played on the ball. Everything was at a faster tempo, which admittedly is probably drilled into them pre-kickoff. Start higher tempo, go and press higher. Even the Everton game, we never played for 15 minutes. We sat off them and let them have the ball. Sunday wasn't like that. Højbjerg has been outstanding for four games in a row now, including a defeat at Manchester United. And Bentancur was great at Brighton, and he was particularly good against you on Sunday. And they played how I want my central midfielders to play in terms of getting on the ball, and I'm going to show the advanced tiers this on Talking Tactics later today, getting on the ball and looking up and trying to play incisive passes into the feet of Kane, Kulusevski and Son. And looking up and not just taking the safe, easy option, playing lots of 1-2s. I can see movement happening within Tottenham. There was one quote from Conte, which I couldn't find afterwards, but supposedly he'd said to them, play with freedom today. And suppose it's the first time he said that to him. And there was an expression in terms of the movement. You look at Tottenham now, and these sounds like basic things. Every player's got two passes now. And I promise you, that hasn't been the case for Tottenham probably since going back to late 2018, I would say, where a Tottenham player is on the ball and I can see people moving into position. Everything feels quite stationary with Tottenham quite a lot. That's not happening now. They're constantly trying to move the ball from side to side and find options. If there isn't a second pass on, it's the responsibility of someone in a more offensive position to make a passing line and a passing angle. And that is just quite simplistic. It's making us more dangerous to play against. And what I really loved about Sunday was the way we played and the fact it was enjoyable. It wasn't just a big game win. We played some quality football. The move where Kane missed the chance where...
Second half.
Yeah, where he looped it over. And I don't know why he didn't... He's great with his left foot. I don't know why he didn't just take it with his left foot.
Again, it was like, oh shit, we're in trouble here. And he fucked it up somehow.
Do you know how long we had the ball before that?
Nah.
Over 2 minutes. Quality. Really, really good and impressed. And now a lot of that you can... I watched it back and I watched that whole clip back twice. Once looking at Tottenham in terms of how we're moving the ball and looking at West Ham in terms of, okay, yeah, you look a bit tired. We still got to do it. You still got to do it. And it's not just possession for the sake of keeping possession. The ball ended up on the left wing. It came all the way back. The ball ended up on the right wing. It came all the way back. Constantly trying to work openings and finding movement and really, really pleased. It was probably... The most I enjoyed an actual Tottenham performance in terms of the style, certainly under Antonio Conte, and possibly going back to Poch.
It's quite a while. You had a few managers in between.
Yeah. Mourinho's Tottenham never played like that. Might have been devastating on the counter-attack with Kane and Son. Fine. And be really enjoyable doing it. But actual style of the play... Brilliant. And obviously, we definitely never played like that under Nuno, right?
No. Interesting. So, you now come up against Newcastle next, and we obviously have Everton next. We should both be winning those games. But top four still in with a shout, but realistically, fifth or sixth. You would be disappointed to finish below sixth now, wouldn't you?
We won't.
Yeah, I can't see that either.
I genuinely don't think we'll finish below that now. You can still finish above us. Wolves can still finish above us. But I would be with no distraction of you'll be in a cup final. Or,
yeah.
I can't see it. The fixtures
and
we've got.
The running is particularly good for you.
The fixtures are good. And I know you joked about it a bit on Tuesday about putting it in your program about cup final. Well, every game left is a cup final because we're chasing the enemy. And as soon as we drop points, it's potentially over, isn't it? But keep winning, keep putting the pressure on, and there's a chance.
Probably helps that it's Arsenal up there, the top four. Your local rivals makes it a little bit more of motivation than chasing United, potentially.
Certainly for the supporters. I don't know if that makes much of a difference for the players.
They still want to win.
But then that can go both ways where the longer it goes on, say we keep... their game in hand is Chelsea. Say they lose at Chelsea, right? Then it's 3-point difference and they've still got to come and play us. And the goal difference is really similar, right? So then at that point, okay, right, it's really close. The later it gets, the more the fans will... The fans at the moment are in a positive, right, go and sweep the opposition away. Because we're scoring a lot of goals, right? 3 against you, 3 Man City, 5 Everton, 4 at Leeds, even 2 at Old Trafford. Like, we're not having any problems finding the net at the moment. But the closer it gets, the more the pressure will come.
Yeah.
And the fans will get nervous rather than excited about what's happening because of Arsenal. It does add a layer to it, certainly.
Well, we shall see. There's no Tottenham next week, but we'll be back the week after.
You can tell them what I'm doing next week if you want.
No, you tell them.
So
you tell them.
I'll tell them. So the plan is... I was going to say podcast, but they're not podcasts. So what I've decided to do in Suj's absence next week is record, what would you call them? Audiobooks, I suppose. It's more of an audio.
Audio diary of sorts.
So I kept a diary during Tottenham's last season at White Hart Lane, the 2016-17 season, when we finished second to Chelsea. And the idea is to split that into 10 recordings for you, one for each month, August through to May, and release 2 a day for you next week, Monday to Friday. And these are going to be long. I read through September back last night, and it's about 1 hour and 10 minutes. So it's not short.
It's written, the diary is written as if you can just straight read it. So it's prose, like full sentences. It's not just like note form.
No, it's a full written. It was something that I did at the time because I wanted to remember the last season.
Right, okay.
So, yeah, it can be...
So you literally are reading the diary.
Yeah.
It's an audiobook then in that case.
It's an audiobook week with me, yeah.
Patrons, you're going to get a treat. I'd love your feedback because if it's good, we'll get onto Penguin, HarperCollins, Random House and publish James's diary as a book. We might have to...
The idea when I did it was maybe there might be in it, but then... And also it was the first year I knew you. I don't know if you get to mention it at any point, but obviously at the end of that season, then we started
podding. That would be FPL really fascinating.
After that,
so. When you said you'd kept a diary, I felt like it was going to be like note for me type of just to jot it down, but it's a proper diary.
And it isn't a diary as in, on Thursday, I went out with the wife. We went to the cinema. It's just
Spurs
Tottenham.
And all the games, tactics and all that kind of stuff. How you felt.
Yep. What's really interesting reading it back, which I didn't feel like I felt, but on day one, I felt we could win the league, which is interesting. I don't remember feeling like that, but...
I think it'll be fascinating. Listeners, you're going to get a treat. You're going to get first listen to it. And depending on your feedback and how it goes, I think there's going to be legs and maybe some content for the public. But in the meantime, enjoy yourselves. I did mention on this pod, or I mentioned on a pod, obviously, if you're in Dubai to watch West Ham Everton... I have been tipped off now, James. Let me find it. That the Dubai Hammers meet for all the home games at a place called... Shout out to Jarvo for letting me know. Nelson's Bar in Media Rotana, which I think is a hotel. So Nelson's Bar, Media Rotana. And apparently, mate, free chip butties at half time. So get yourselves down there if you are around. That's where I'm going to watch the game.
And,
it's not far from where I'm
staying. If you're at the Lane on Sunday week, you can come and have a beer with me as well.
Free tour. Free tours.
In terms of the rest, that's obviously going to feel, To be honest, it's going to be more content than you normally get, actually, in terms of actual listening time. I will still do something for the differential show on Friday, which will just be me. I don't know if maybe you want to send your predictions for the games something. And I'll probably record something very, very short, 15, 20 minutes or so for you. But otherwise, like, the no Q&A next week, no quiz next week. It just makes sense to try this when I'm here on mid-tod and on my own. I will probably theme the advanced tier videos around that season of Tottenham as well, in terms of like a talking tactics or something from one of the games as well.
Sounds good. Patrons, look after yourselves. Enjoy the week, and I'll see you in a couple. Ciao for now.
Thanks, patrons. Can you Spurs? Cue music, please, man child. Messi,